across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet, by webcast and by podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Well, I am hoping everything is good with you. Thank you for your emails. Remember, if your email requires a reply, please put it in the subject line, response or reply required, and then I will make sure that I get back to you. Please know, of course, as ever, I do read everything that you say. Thank you very much if you've made a donation to the show recently. Very gratefully received. Don't forget to check in on my social media and on the website for details of the Unexplained Live 2023. That's our very, very special cruise at the back end of October into November, going all the way up the eastern coast, the seaboard of North America, from Florida all the way up to Canada and back again. It's being organized with Marella again, who provide beautiful cruise experiences, so they provide the holiday, and I host the special guest speakers and their sessions, and I hope that it is something that you will very, very much enjoy. Remember, if you do book the cruise, remember to use the booking code PODCAST100. That's one word complete, no spaces, PODCAST100, and then you will receive, per booking, a £100 discount. And I do hope that you can join us. Please check out the details and see the people who will be part of this year, including a new addition to the speaker list, Liz Cormell, who you've loved on the TV show and the podcast. So we've got Malcolm Robinson, we've got Andrea Perrin, we've got David Rolfe, the man who made the famous documentary about the Turin Shroud, bringing a replica of the Shroud. Some revelations you're going to get from him. And we've also got David Whitehouse, of course, Dr. David Whitehouse, talking space and science and lots of other things that last year he was so successful with on the cruise. Such wonderful feedback about him. So he returns this year. And now including Liz Cormell. So I hope that you can be part of the Unexplained Live 2023. Details, as I say, on my social media and through my website. There is a special edition of the podcast about that. Boiling hot in London, 90 degrees for several days, 30-odd Fahrenheit. Boiling hot as I record this now, so I'm going to be drinking a lot of cold water. Totally airless room I'm in at the moment, and I've got a day of recordings and work to do here. So, I'm not looking for sympathy. No, oh dear. And thank you very much for all of your interactions. And like I say, if you've made a donation to The Unexplained lately, thank you so much for that. Okay. Guest on this edition of The Unexplained, somebody who may well be new to you, Lorraine McAdam. We're going to talk about her book, Phantoms in the Night, or ETs. Now, Lorraine is in Cumbria, and on the surface of it is an absolutely level, ordinary person, like anybody you would meet anywhere. But her life experience to date has been far from ordinary. It says in the information about her book, "This is my own simple, truthful, riveting, intriguing, and sometimes frightening account of multiple encounters and experiences with beings I believe," she says, "originate from other worlds and possibly other dimensions." Now, when I was looking at the book and thinking about this, it has a certain amount of resonance with Paul Sinclair's experiences, which he documented in Night People. And many ordinary people have extraordinary events. As I've said here before, I myself saw what I believe to be, and please don't laugh, a spindly, tall alien in the door frame of my bedroom when I was 17 years of age in Crosby, Liverpool. And whatever that was as clear as the hand in front of my face right now. So I believe that quite extraordinary things can happen to the most ordinary people. So, Lorraine McAdam, the guest on this edition, her book is called Phantoms in the Night, or ETs. I think that's more or less everything said. So let's get to the guest in Cumbria, United Kingdom, Lorraine McAdam. Lorraine, thank you very much for coming on my show.
It's nice to meet you.
Well, looking at the temperature charts, I think it's as warm in Cumbria that they always say is rainy. It's as warm there as it is here in London, which means it's boiling hot.
It is, absolutely. I'm sweltering here in my study. I've got the door shut to keep the racket of my family away because we're all getting ready to go on a hike up a mountain. So we live very close to the Lake District.
Well, you know, it's a beautiful part of the world. Now, we're going to tell a remarkable story. It is a story that I'm sure you will agree, some people may find very hard to take on board. They will find it hard to believe.
I realise that, and I actually say that in my introduction in my book. all I would say to them is, I'm not a natural extrovert. I'm quite a highly sensitive person. This, I would never have chosen to do this. If you knew me, you would know I would never make something like this up or have chosen to do this of my own volition. I'm usually a very quiet person, really inclined to be an introvert. I felt like I had to come out with my story because I saw that there was a sea change, if you will, towards UFOs and sightings and that sort of thing and experiences. And I felt like I should come out to talk about my abduction experiences to help others. And I've since joined lots of groups on Facebook and I've tried to help other people who don't know what the heck is happening to them. And I would say also that I'm a qualified nurse. I have 3 degrees. I'm a qualified teacher. And I have an extra degree in linguistics, a bachelor's degree, and I had a tuition, well, I still have a tuition business. Why would I put all that at risk, you know, for no reason? I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
What I would say, because I've heard a million stories in my life, and I don't damn people just because I think something, because I don't know what they've experienced. But, you know, I would say that for all of those reasons and more that you've just outlined, why would you make this up?
Well, why would I? I'm already a wealthy person. I won't go into it, but I'm married to quite a wealthy man. I'm not doing it for the money. My husband, I'm very comfortable. You know, I had no need to do this for the money. If anybody wants,
right?
You know, some people will say, she's doing it for the money.
Some emailers, the first thing they say is somebody else publishing a book for money. So we can rule that out right now. I think we need to get into the story.
Yes.
Quotes in the book. This is my own simple, truthful, riveting, intriguing, and sometimes frightening account of multiple encounters and experiences. In the introduction, author Michael Zerger says you've got a number of people writing accreditations to the book, giving their paragraph. He says there will be some readers, perhaps those willing to believe or at least leave an open mind, that will no doubt ask why her and why not me. I guess normally I ask this question further down the conversation, but we can do that now. You know, why do you think, and we will outline what you've been through for the thick end of half a century, your entire life, but why do you think that it's you?
I've tried to theorize about this. I think that I've wondered if it was because I was psychic, because I have psychic ability that I think I've inherited from my grandmother, who was also a spirit medium. I can also hear spirit. I see ghosts quite often, as well as having encountered the ETs. So I wonder if it was because I was a natural psychic. It could be that drew them to me. Also, I've tried to hide my psychic ability, but this is kind of forcing it out into the open. So I wondered if that was an intention. And also, I wondered, is it my DNA? Because I've really, since all this has been happening to me, I've really gone back into my own family genealogy. And I found that we've come from Scandinavian Celtic people on my father's side of the family. And that goes way, way back. And when I read about what they call the Tuatha De Danann in the Celtic legends, they were called the people that came from the sky. And I just wonder if way, way back there may be a link to an alien race. I've wondered that because I've watched a lot of Graham Hancock's documentaries about the lost civilizations and that sort of thing. I've even wondered if there was a breakaway civilization in the past that got off planet before we went backwards, and they're coming back now and contacting their own. I've looked into this quite a lot, and I wonder if it could be DNA related, or if in fact I could be an incarnated person that's come into this life, because I believe very firmly in reincarnation, although I know everybody doesn't. And I've incarnated here for a reason. I've wondered if that's the reason, you know, perhaps from another planet.
Well, of course, neither of us definitely knows, but I'm inclined to agree that whatever we are or think we are today is not entirely determined, but partly determined by what we were once. So, I'm with you on that.
Yes, I agree. When you go back in to the very ancient writings, and I've really dug into this, you know, the reincarnation was taught by the very early church as well. It was the Council of Nicaea that altered it all and made the church more powerful, you know, and taught the kind of misleading teachings about hell and all that kind of thing. The original church fathers taught reincarnation. So it's interesting.
Mm. And there might be some who would say, and, you know, we don't have to dwell on it, but that one of the reasons for talking about reincarnation and those sorts of things may have always been, and I'm sure it's been part of it in the past and through history, is that people are afraid of dying, and so they need to make an explanation for themselves that shows that it is not just a black void and a switch off at the end of it all. But that's probably another debate for another time.
Yeah, no, that's okay.
At the end of this, please remind me, I want to go through a list of your, because I think it's great, I've never seen a list like this, of consequences of having experiences like this. You list about 20 things, maybe more, that are consequences, but I think we have to get into telling your life story. So talk to me about how this all started, and I know that goes back to the 1970s.
It does. It was early, sort of mid-70s. I was 12 years old, and the first time it happened, unfortunately, my parents broke up when I was 11, and the first time it happened, I was at my father's house and I started hearing voices and I thought, am I going mad? And it was very frightening. And nothing particular happened on that occasion. And then after I hit my 12th birthday, I started being what I realised today was I was being taken. But at the time, I didn't realise what was happening and it was very frightening. And what would happen would be that my body would become completely paralysed from head to foot. I couldn't even move my neck. I couldn't even open my mouth to scream. It was that bad. And I'd feel this vibration going all the way through my body and I'd hear this buzzing noise. And then I would black out and it would be nighttime, perhaps 3 o'clock in the morning, something like that usually. And then I would wake up and it would be broad daylight and it'd be something like 6 o'clock on average, you know, and if it was summer, it would be daylight or it would be later in the morning. It would be nearly time for school. And I caught with this for quite a long time on my own. And then I tried to tell my mum, but she just said, put it down to me having a vivid imagination. And at the time, because I was a kind of a strong Christian, as it were, and I've been brought up as a Christian, as a Catholic, actually, by my father, I put it down to demon persecution, because one night I caught a sight of one of the faces of what I now realise was the grey alien with the big black eyes, and I immediately assumed, I was so terrified, I thought it must be a demon. So I prayed and prayed for them to go away, and obviously they didn't. And then I think they were trying to show me in their way, no, we're not demons, because what happened, it became a little bit worse, because one night they paralysed me, but they let me feel they were drawing on my back, although I couldn't do anything to stop it. And then I blacked out after that, and then after I came out of it and I could move, I went and put the light on. I was terrified because I felt the fingers in my back. I could feel them drawing, or what felt like drawing something. And when I took my nightdress off, they'd drawn a series of like hieroglyphic type symbols on my back of my nightdress, which was a pale blue kind of polyester one. And I just put it in the laundry because my mum did the laundry, of course. I was too young to do it. And my mum really told me off and said I'd done it. And I just didn't know what to do. She made me scrub it off with fairy soap. And I just thought, you don't believe me. And how would anyone believe me? I can't blame you because I don't even know what's happening myself. And I just found it really frightening. And then another occasion, which I talk about in my book, and answer this to the skeptics, how did this happen? I ended up locked outside my own house in my own back garden, locked out at 6 a.m. in the morning. And I knocked on the door for mum to let me in, and she accused me of actually literally climbing down the downpipe, which was under my bedroom window, and doing it all on purpose. And to which I replied to her, well, how did I lock the door then, you know? And she would not believe me at all, which was really quite upsetting, traumatising for me.
Didn't she threaten you? Sorry to jump in here. She threatened you with a psychiatrist, didn't she?
She threatened me with a psychiatrist, yeah, because it had happened from, it was happening on and off from me being 12 to 16, quite intensely, really. And I try, it's hard to articulate this because back in that era, there was nothing about the abduction phenomena. There was no one you could go to. If you went in a bookshop, you'd have to look under the esoteric section for anything at all. And the only thing I found was Eric von Däniken's Eric von Däniken's early books.
The whole gods and spacemen thing, yeah,
that thing, but there was nothing much else, yeah.
And were you looking for those things? Did you believe in those things then? Or did the events that happened to you happen before you started getting interested?
They happened before I started getting interested because my dad had Eric von Däniken's book, as it happened. But I wasn't interested. I just literally, like I say, I feel like it chose me. No, I had no, it didn't even register on my radar. As I say, because I was a Christian, I judged that I was being persecuted by demons. And I actually got the church, whole church praying for me. I asked my friend to come in and cleanse the room, a priest, a vicar. And I, for years, I thought it was demon persecution. Honestly, I did. I know you'll probably laugh at that. But
did you think you were possessed?
I actually wondered that at one point, yes. It was really frightening. And my mum didn't go to church. I was more religious than my mum. And that was never suggested by the priest, but he did pray over me a lot and bless me with holy water and all the rest of it. But none of it made any difference whatsoever, of course.
You know, the mind is a peculiar thing. Only this week, I've had a string of very, very vivid three-dimensional dreams in which I was thinking, interacting, speaking to people that I'd never seen before. And, you know, I just put that down to being the fact that I'm stressed at the moment. I think about work and stuff like that. And, you know, all the stuff that people have to face in their lives these days. So what I'm saying is that the mind is a remarkable thing. Did you never doubt, even though you were very young then, whether these experiences were real or whether perhaps they'd been down to some trauma that you'd experienced or something that had happened in your life? For example, I mean, your parents' divorce, that is traumatic for a young person.
Well, I did, yes. I did think about that because I was very upset because my father left, and I didn't really see him a lot when he remarried. So, yes, I did wonder that because I'd been heartbroken about that. Not seeing my dad as much as I had done. But I want to stress that I had no idea what I was seeing, because I did catch sight of the greys. And there was one night as well when they put their hands around my waist and I actually dug my nails into their hand and they dug the nails back. And when I came to, there were nail mark imprints in my hand. So, of course, I did think that. I tried to find every logical reason you could look for, to explain it away.
I'm not one to be critical of anybody, and certainly not your mother. Why did your mother, when these things kept happening to you and you were getting marks on yourself and you were getting locked out of the house, why didn't she involve anybody else? I'm not talking about bringing in a psychiatrist necessarily, but, didn't somebody need to know about this, bearing in mind that these things began when you were under 16?
Well, she insisted on me going. I did go for one visit to the GP, and she just put it down to me being tired and hormony, as she put it. So my mum kind of blamed it on hormones, and that kind of thing. And it was just kind of, my mum was a very down-to-earth lady. She couldn't understand anything spiritual. She was always very down-to-earth. She actually, I have to say as well, later on in life when she came up here, she did see a UFO over the field that I saw.
Really? What did she see?
She saw a UFO feeding off one of the pylons in the field that I later saw some craft and a landing craft in. That was in 2008. She's not with us anymore, but it's just not like her. She wouldn't make that up. She was very, very down-to-earth lady. Anybody that knew her would say there's no way that she would make something like that.
No, she sounds very, very very solid and, down-to-earth and not believing in those things. What did she tell you? Did she come to you and say, Lorraine, you were right?
She didn't say you were right, but you mean after she'd seen the UFO?
Yes, yeah.
I said, I was cross because I said, well, why didn't you come wake me up? And I would have loved to have seen it. And she said, well, she said, it's convinced me that there's not just us on this earth, is how she put it. She said, there's more, she quoted Oscar Wilde at me, actually. She said, there's more in heaven and earth than we dream of, you know, or something like that.
Well, that sounds to me like a bit of a conversion later on in her life.
Yes, I think so, yeah.
Okay. Now, this is interesting because, you know, if I've read it right, and you tell me if I haven't, these experiences, and I've heard this a number of times before from people, mm-hmm. these experiences took a pause when you furthered your education, when you, you know, went to university.
Yeah, they took a pause when I was doing my nurse training. They suddenly stopped at 16. This is what puzzles me about the whole thing. And they didn't really bother me much at all for quite a while. And it was only after I qualified as a nurse that something happened when I went on a holiday to Cyprus with another nurse and got chronic food poisoning that they re-entered my life, so to speak. Do you want me to talk about that?
I do, but before you do, because that's a great story, and you've even got an illustration in the book of your impression of whatever it was tended you in that hospital in Cyprus. Yeah. Were you ever told anything by these creatures that you were interacting with, either telepathically or in words, as to why they were interested in you?
Not initially. When I go into the Cyprus story, not initially, not through my teenage years, I was just terrified of them and I used to swear and scream at them, I'll be honest, and tell them to get lost. And then I'd try prayer. I'd say, in God's name, please go away and all this, because I was treating them as a spiritual oppression, really. So they didn't really say a lot. And I would pray to God and they would often say, your God can't help you now. When I was going under it, you know, when I was being taken, I believe. But that was all they said through my teenage years. So it was only as I've got further on in life and realised what I was interacting with, I think, that they started to try and communicate things.
And if you listen to a lot of other people who say that they've been abducted over the years, many of them will say that the aliens say, we're not going to harm you. That's not the case here. They didn't care, it seems, whether they harmed you or not.
They didn't seem to care, no. All they wanted to do, I feel like, especially when I was being taken in those years, I think, was just to shut me up, because I used to really scream and get hysterical, you know. And yeah.
Okay.
I think just...
It's 1986, and, you know, those of us, and I have certainly been where you were. I think it was an experience that people had more in the old days, but it certainly happens, and when it happens, it's terrible. 1986, you go to Cyprus, you get food poisoning, and you end up in hospital, I believe.
I did. I got severe food poisoning. Nobody bothered to warn me, don't eat the salad abroad.
Oh, God.
And... I was taken to a hospital in Ayia Napa in an ambulance, and even in the ambulance I was going in and out of consciousness. So they put me on oxygen and intravenous saline, and then I was just put in a hospital bed and left. And then when I woke up a bit later, I was really embarrassed to find that there was this handsome blonde man in the bed next to me, and around him were two blonde men visiting him and two blonde ladies. And I don't know why, whether it was because I was confused or what, with drugs or whatever, I don't know. I couldn't find my buzzer to send for the nurse, and I was desperate for the loo. So I asked one of these, indicated, could he help me to the loo? Because it was only a few feet away to the, you had a private sort of loo of your own. And one of the ladies stepped away and went to get a wheelchair, physically put me in it, took me to the loo, waited till I came out, and then took me back and put me back in bed. And she was really kind. I got this kind of really kind, caring energy off her. And then a little bit, I went back. I must have fallen back into sleep, deep sleep. And when I woke up, I looked at the bed, fully expecting to see this blonde guy, thinking he was Swedish or something. And it was made up neatly. There was nobody there. And then a lady came to reinsert my saline drip because it had come out. And I said to her, where's that guy gone that was in the bed next to mine? And she looked at me really puzzled, as if I was mental or something. And she said, there's never been anyone in here. There's only ever been you in here since you've been admitted. And I was absolutely stunned about that.
So do you think that the aliens took you to the toilet?
Well, literally, yeah. I mean, what other explanation? Either that or, well, again, at the time, I didn't connect it with aliens. I want to stress that. I put it down to, I don't know whether you've ever read in the Gospels, Jesus teaches that not to be fearful. We can be in the company of angels when we meet straight, kind strangers. Mm-hmm. And I just wrote them off as angels in disguise. Now, I know that sounds funny, but that's what I did. I know that might even sound bonkers to some people, but I did not connect it with the Nordic ETs. I only connected it later when I'd done more research. So I want to stress that.
When you came through that experience, right, when you'd been to the bathroom and come back, I don't know how to put this, but there is a kind of proof, isn't it, as to whether or not this happened? Because if you were relieved, in other words, if you'd been to the toilet,
exactly.
Then it's a very difficult one to sum up this. But you know, if you were past the feeling, the urges, then you must have got there somehow.
Well, exactly. How can an hallucination take you to get a wheelchair, physically put you in it and take you to the loo and then bring you back again? You know, I would say that to any cynical person out there.
But you do have to admit that being taken to the toilet is not exactly a profound spiritual experience.
Well, not really, but it shows to me that at a time when I was in feeling terribly lonely because I was a nurse in charge and useless and feeling so depressed because I was on my own in a foreign country. There were no family could even come and see me. I couldn't ring my family. I was so helpless to let them know how ill I was. I believe that they were just showing me, we're around you, we care about you. But I still don't have any solid theories as to why, unless, as I say, going back to what I said to you earlier, that they consider me family in some way. I don't know.
Now, apparently not long after this, you were snatched or abducted or taken from the place that you worked and disappeared for 1 hour. And
yes.
There were people who noted that fact. There were colleagues who noted the fact that you just vanished for an hour.
Yes, there were. I was working in a private hospital in Accrington, and it was strange, really, because the buzzer just went off on the top floor, which had all the patients with dementia, so they wouldn't normally think to ring a buzzer, if that makes sense, you know, which was highly unusual in and of itself. So I was a staff nurse with another staff nurse, and I said, I'll go, but I was in charge equally with her. So I ran upstairs, and I came out of the lift, and as I exited the lift, I saw two strange beings right at the bottom, and I was absolutely terrified by this, I have to emphasise. I'll describe them. They have pale brown, leathery-looking skin. I sensed that one was female because she was smaller, and one was a male. And he had, I've done a drawing of him in my book. He had very large pointy ears. I know it sounds, and quite a large nose. Anyway, when I saw these two, they were dressed a bit like people of Indian ethnicity dress. The lady had a scarf like a lady of Indian ethnicity would wrap it around her head, so I couldn't see if she had similar features to whoever she was stood next to. So I ran like the clappers because I was absolutely terrified. And this was while I was fully awake. I used to do 40 hours a week on nights. And I ran and locked myself in a nearby bathroom. And at the time when I went up, you always look at your fob watch by habit, because if somebody had, say, a TIA or something like that, which they often did at older people, you would have to know at the time of incident and that sort of thing, or if somebody had an accident. So I was in the habit of looking at my fob watch, and I'd looked at it before I entered the lift. It was 1 a.m. And then I was so terrified, I pulled the cord in the bathroom that summons another nurse. And the other staff nurse came. And the first thing she said was, "You've gone white." And she said, "What's happened?" And I tried to tell her, but I don't think she believed me. Now, they knew I was psychic, the other staff, because I'd done psychometric readings of the jury and things for them. So she just put it down to me having seen some sort of ghost or something, because it was known that it was haunted because it was on the site of an old cotton mill, this hospital. And I don't think anyone believed me. She made me a cup of tea. And it was only after when I got down, she said, "We've looked all over for you." She said, "We've been looking. Where have you been? You know, looking everywhere for you for an hour." And I looked at my fob watch. It was 2 a.m. But in my mind, only 5 to 10 minutes had gone by. So it felt like not only had I seen these strange things, but like I'd had some missing. I realised I'd got some missing time as well.
So your colleagues were used to the unusual from you, as you say that you did psychometric readings, which is where you take an object and you pick up the vibrations and impressions from the object. So, you know, they knew a little bit about you. Yeah. But nevertheless, yes. You disappear for an hour. That's unusual. Did you ever think, and this goes for the experience in Cyprus as well, that you might be having hallucinations, waking hallucinations?
Yes, I considered that as a possibility. You know, but all I can say is if they were waking hallucinations, they were certainly terrifying. But I would argue that with all the things that had happened in my teenage years and that have happened after this event, that, you know, all taken together, if you were in a court of law, I would say it was circumstantial evidence stacked up against it being hallucinations, because I've come back with physical bruises on me and marks on me, you know, that weren't there before. And
did you ever get a doctor to look at them?
No, I didn't.
Even though you were a nurse?
I know. We're bad patients, though. No, I didn't, because I thought I wanted to bury it. I didn't want to acknowledge it. The first clue I actually got was around this time that it was ETs, because before that event, I'd been reading the book Communion, That's Significant, and I'd looked, and it was a front cover that caught my eye just before this event happened significantly. And when I saw the face on the front, I was absolutely shocked to my core, because I thought, I know that face. And I had to get that book, and I read it through, and I really resonated with some of the things that Whitley Strieber goes into had happened to me too. And I thought, what the heck is going on? And I actually developed a form of PTSD after that. And I did go and see a doctor, and I was put on antidepressants for a while.
And did you explain it's because, not to put too fine a point on it, I believe that I'm having encounters with strange beings, maybe aliens?
No, I didn't, because I thought he'd label me as a nutcase, and I was frightened for my career. I only had myself to rely on as a staff nurse, and I thought, if I start spouting things like this, I might even jeopardise my nursing, because you can be struck off, you know.
Yeah. I mean, if anybody'd reported that, or if you'd reported that, then I have a feeling, although it may not have happened, who knows what happens, but I have a feeling that they might have done some further investigations.
Yeah, I was frightened I'd get labelled as a nutter or you know, even put under psychiatric care.
But we have to stress, and here I am jumping in again, forgive me for that, but I just wanted to get this in, that all through this, you were doing a perfectly good job at work, you were living your ordinary life. Were you married by that point?
Yes. Right. Well, no, sorry, I beg your pardon. No, at that point, I had been married, and I'd got divorced. I'd left him by that time. So I was single on my own, and I only had myself to fall back on, you know. So I was terrified of telling anybody, because I thought, I do not want to jeopardise my nursing career. You know, it was... So to me, that should convince people, if nothing else does, that I'm not making this up, you know. So
you sound very calm about it, and yet to have these experiences happening when you can't predict them, with things that you don't understand, who don't explain what they're doing to you. And you said that there was some similarity with Whitley Strieber's accounts. Well, Whitley Strieber's accounts, some of them are utterly alarming.
Yes.
By rights, I think you should have been utterly, totally, permanently traumatised.
I was, but I believe I must be very strong mentally. That's all I can put it down to, because I had no one else to rely on but myself. It's surprising, the human spirit, I think, can be very strong. I've always been quite strong mentally, because to get through what was happening in my teenage years from 12 to 16 and not have a complete breakdown, I think, shows that in and of itself. what I tried to do was compartmentalise it and just, I used to compartmentalise it in my mind and just put it to off to one side and think, okay, that's happened, but I'm going to carry on. I have to carry on. I have no one to rely on but me, you know.
Well, no, I totally understand that.
Yeah.
I'm talking to my audience now when I say this. You know, you must, and again addressing my audience, you must have had times in your life maybe when you've encountered somebody and you've thought, is that person real? I've met in the last 2 months, I've had conversations with two people, and I'm not one for making conversation. I mean, where I live, people tend not to. And I'm a shy person anyway, so it takes a lot.
I can't believe it or not.
Well, you know, it takes a lot to get me talking to people, even though I do this for a living. Maybe this is a compensation for the shyness. I don't know. I've never known.
Yeah.
But in the last 2 months, I've talked to two people. A woman in, I think, about 30, and another woman older than that. And I've had really nice, totally spontaneous, by utter chance conversations in a way that I just don't do. And both of them were very, very revealing, very, very, very nice conversations that left me uplifted. But both of them were wearing the same kind of hat. Now, I know this is a weird thing to say, but they were both wearing Trilby-style summer hats. Different people who clearly didn't know each other, and two nice conversations. I never have conversations. And I came away after both of them thinking, what a nice experience, how nice to meet somebody nice, and, you know, I don't have conversations, so what a pleasure, because I don't talk to many people during the week. And then I started thinking, and please, my listener, don't think that I'm mad, were they real? Because the conversations were almost like these people sort of knew me in a way. It was very, very, very strange. And the reason that I'm saying that is that it seems to me through your life you've had encounters with unusual people. I think there was a guy who called it the front door of your dad's house. I think when your parents were estranged, a little man, I think, who wanted some water. And then you were in your father's house and you saw a little bald man at the top of the stairs. So you seem to have had this habit. This propensity to meet strange people that you later say, were they for real?
Yeah, I mean, it happened to me when all the abduction things were going on in the 80s, closer to 16, when what appeared to be two Mormon came to call in on us. And one was had dark hair and one was very blonde, had perfect skin, very, very handsome, both of them. And I invited them in and we had a chat about the usual things you talk about, you know, the Book of Moroni and that kind of thing. And then the strange thing was, I remember the blonde one came back on his own, and they're not supposed to do that for a start. And I can remember having a conversation with him and sitting him on the couch and offering him coffee, which he refused. And then I can't remember anything else. I cannot remember what I said to him or anything. And then just before what I told you about me going missing at work happened, that night significantly, I'm glad you brought this up, because that night significantly when that happened later, we were going up to work and I was with a colleague, and these two men stopped us and they were both dressed identically. And I thought, oh, they're Mormons. And then I looked at the blonde one, they were dark-haired and blonde-haired, and I thought, I know your face. And bearing in mind, I was 16 and then I'm nearly 29 now. And it was, I'll swear it was the same guy that I'd met previously, and he hadn't aged one bit. He just looked the same age. He just looked exactly the same. And the energy coming off him, and it was almost like he was saying to me, yes, it is me. You're not imagining things. This is me. They asked us what the time was, that's all. And it was almost like, and then my colleague teased me after, because we came in on the same bus. He teased me and he said, I could tell you fancied that blonde one, you know. And I said, no, I didn't. And it was so funny.
You just knew him, or thought you did.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. There was like this strange energy around him.
The feeling that you might be part of somebody else's project somewhere.
I've had that feeling, yeah. And I know it sounds totally insane. I have theorized, you know, that I could be family from elsewhere, and that they're keeping an eye on me, intermittently contacting me to let me know, you know, you've chosen this, you've chosen to incarnate here. One of the reasons might be to raise people's awareness on Earth that there are other worlds and other people on them. I really don't know. That would be my answer to that. I don't know.
Among the strange things that happen to you on a day-to-day level, you say that when you go to the supermarket, you know, even though you haven't accidentally got something in your trolley that maybe you hadn't checked out, just, you know, happens to people, the alarms always go off.
Yeah, they do. We recently went to New York, actually, and every single shop I went into, I triggered the alarms. And I even got chased, which was so embarrassing, by a security guard out of one clothing store. I think it was...
Well, let's not mention it. Let's not name it.
No, it doesn't matter. But I thought it was hilarious because he obviously didn't find anything. I've been chased by a security guard out of Tesco once, and he didn't find anything either because I have my receipt with me. Mm. So I always make sure to keep my receipts handy because this happens so much. And when I go through airport security, I often get felt down and singled out because I trigger the alarms, even if I take all my jewellery off and everything.
Have you got any unusual dentistry?
No, I haven't. Okay. No.
No pacemaker? Nothing like that?
No, nothing.
I can't work that out then. I don't know.
No, I can't either. No, so that is, to me, kind of, I would suggest, at least circumstantial evidence for maybe that there's something.
Some kind of residual energy, maybe.
Or that. It could be that, because my husband laughs at me because when I get really angry and he's seen it happen, it's become a standing joke. I make all the light bulbs pop. Especially if I get really upset or really angry, and they go pop, pop, pop above my head. So I don't know what that is.
As a teenager, did you experience anything that today we would call poltergeist activity, stuff, you know, lifting itself off shelves and things falling over? It's just out of interest.
Not a lot of that. I saw the ghost at my dad's house that you mentioned, and I found out from the neighbour. When I described him, she said, that sounds like the guy that used to live there. He was a butcher. Mm. She said he died alone. So,
do you believe... I'm sorry, here I am. Look at me jumping in again. See, no, I'm so keen to get all the answers here. But do you believe, as a lot of people, I think maybe even including me, are starting to believe that all of these things... experiences of ghosts, and I've seen one, and my father saw a few when he was in the police, experiences of ETs, whatever it might be, that all of these things might actually be connected, because they seem to be connected in you.
Yes, I could concede that they could be all connected. There is a theory, isn't there, that the ETs could be interdimensional, as are, I would argue, spirits and ghosts. So, yeah, I think there's some crossover there, definitely.
I think so too.
Yeah, definitely.
I make a habit of not listening to other people's interviews because I don't want to be influenced by what they might say. I'd rather come at it with my own perspective. But I did, before doing this, find an interview with you. I don't think it was done very many days ago. Done by a very nice man in Australia who I thought asked some very... very perceptive questions, but you talked to him about being floated down a corridor in a spaceship, if I heard that right.
That's right. I wasn't, I don't know whether I was in a spaceship, I don't know where I was, but that was one of the occasions when I was allowed to remember see the abduction as it was happening. I went through the normal buzzing and paralysis, and then instead of blacking out, I found myself being held. I couldn't turn my head. I was totally paralysed, but being held and floated down a long white corridor. And I don't know whether I was on a big ship, but the walls were very white and shiny. And then when we got to the end of this corridor, I don't think I was on a ship. I maybe was being shown something on another planet, I felt, because when we got to the end of this tunnel, there were white buildings, and it looked like some kind of city. They were stucco like white buildings. And I felt that the biggest building that I could see in the foreground was some kind of temple. I don't know how I knew that. And then I wanted to pull away and go and explore because it's a natural human reaction to be curious. But he wouldn't let me. Whoever I felt it was, he wouldn't let me go. And I was pulled really rapidly fast back down this corridor. And then I jumped and I just came to later on. So I have no idea what I was shown or what that was, you know, at all. So, but it was very in real time. I could feel the air around me, and that I was somehow floating, you know. So,
you say in the book that you had a visitation when you were pregnant.
I did by with both of my children. The first trimester, I woke up, I'd been having a nap on the bed in the afternoon, and there was a grey over me holding what, I know this is going to sound weird, like what appeared to be an iron-shaped instrument, and I swore my head off at him because he was starting to paralyse me. Maybe that was what they used to paralyse you or something. And I thought, oh, here we go again. And also, I was absolutely terrified as well that he was going to take my fetus, because I'd read by that time, you know, Whitley Strieber saying about missing fetuses. And I was really terrified that they were going to harm or take the baby, but they didn't. So I have no idea. But I will tell you one thing, that child is, he was always highly intelligent. He's very, very clever. Today he's a computer programmer. He's 25 now.
Did you talk to your children about these experiences?
I did, and my husband, and they're very supportive, but they don't really understand. My husband at first, when I first shared it with him, and I used to say, I scream in my head when I'm being taken from next to you, when we were younger, and he reacted much the same way as my mum, and he insisted I went to the doctor and get, and I ended up being put on antidepressants, made no difference at all, you know, he reacted much the same way she did and said, you've got a very vivid imagination. And I knew it wasn't my imagination, you know, so.
You seem to have a habit of having strange experiences on holidays. We talked about Corfu.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You've also had them in Tenerife quite recently and in Kent.
Yes, that's right. In Tenerife, what happened was my husband went off to take the children out of my hair, really, because when they were younger, they used to fight like mad with each other because there's only 3 years between them and they were always, you know. So we said, you have a break and have get a sunbed on the beach. And I got this sunbed, and what I want to stress is that I don't burn in the sun. I have my mum's kind of Mediterranean genes where I tend to go straight brown in the sun. You know, and I don't need a lot of sun lotion. And I did use sun lotion on that occasion. It's not as if I didn't. And it seemed to be 5 minutes and my husband was coming back for me. And I said, it doesn't seem 5 minutes since you left me. And then I got up and I found these huge, long finger-like, which resembled, I have to say, the fingers of the Greys, long burn marks on my thighs. I was burnt all over, third-degree burns.
Third-degree burns?
It felt like sunburn, bad, really bad sunburn. And I was taken to the doctor, to the clinic there, and I had to be treated because it all started blistering on my at the tops of my breasts. My legs were all blistering. And I wish I'd taken photographs. My husband did take a photograph of me about 2 days later, and you can see all the red coming up from my chest and my neck. So I have that as proof. It was just awful. I felt sick and nauseous. I felt really awful and had to rest for most of that holiday. It just spoiled the holiday. But I've never been burned like that ever before or since. And the night that happened, sorry, on the night, I had a very vivid dream or a lucid dream that I was taken aboard a spacecraft, and I was shown, I feel I was put down on a different planet. I felt because it was the sun on this planet was very weak. I could see that it was like, if you will, our sun's just coming up at dawn or at dusk. But it was, I felt that this is their day, and I could just see flat fields for miles and miles. I couldn't see any mountains, And then I was brought, you know, and as we went into the air, I saw a huge, off to my side, I saw a huge ice wall. And then I kind of came to from this dream. And I thought, I wonder if these two events are connected, you know, and I felt somehow that they might be. Because as I say, I don't burn in the sun. I've been in really strong Florida sun, if you've ever been to Florida, in the height of summer, and I have not burned. And I've been in the amusement, in the swimming parks all day, and I don't burn. I just go deep brown normally. So this to me was very strange. And I looked up afterwards that there are incidents of UFOs coming into contact with people and causing this. And I wondered if somehow I've been taken off the beach without realizing it, because Bud Hopkins goes into this and says people have been taken from busy places. It's somehow that they have the technology. I don't know that they can do this.
And to pause time, to put you right back.
Yeah. Yes.
I wonder, what happened in Kent?
Well, that was later on when lockdown hit. That was later on after lockdown hit. You know, when Boris Johnson let us for a brief time in the summer go on holiday, do you remember?
I'm still trying to forget, yes.
Yeah. And we decided, you know, you couldn't go abroad, but you could go anywhere in the UK, I think it was. So my husband decided that we'd go to Folkestone, Kent. So we rented a cottage there. And the strange thing was, as we entered the M6, and even he had to concede this was weird. A Land Rover with blacked out windows passed us. And as it passed us, he likes listening to Radio 4, my husband, classical FM, and it just completely cut out. And I said, why did that happen? That doesn't normally happen around here. And my husband said, because I think it was that black Land Rover. And we thought nothing of it. And then we stopped off at London service station. And you know, this I'm going to tell you about, this is one of these strange things where I saw someone and thought, are they for real? And there was this blonde man sat at the service station and he had sunglasses on. And it was like his eyes just drew me from a distance. It was quite a distance away, sat at the other side of this open air cafe. And I was having my coffee and it was like he wanted me to see him. And it was like he was giving me this intense stare. And I thought, I know you. But how did I know him? I don't know how I knew him. And I felt like this connection almost on a spiritual level rather than it was palpable, really. And then I thought nothing of it. We got back on our journey. And the strange thing was, when we got there, we'd only taken 6 hours, what should have taken 8 hours at least, to get from where we were in Cumbria to down there.
Yeah, but at least, I mean, that's a hell of a drive.
Yeah, and my husband doesn't speed. This is he earns. I mean,
I think you're making very good time if you do it in 6.
Well, he just didn't. I don't believe he did personally. I think we had some missing time, because when we were coming back from that holiday as well, I was taken because we stayed in the Midlands at a Premier Inn, and what happened was, it was about 1 o'clock in the morning, and I just felt this horrible feeling of foreboding, which I often get before they take me, actually. All of a sudden, the buzzing started, the vibrations filled my body and went right through it. And I cried out to God, because I hate it. It's still terrifying. And they said, literally, your God can't help you now. They said that to me. I also heard behind me footsteps run at me, and I felt something hit my back before it happened. So that was really weird. Yeah, that holiday, a few things happened.
You talk about crop circles in fields, or in the field near your home. Do you think that something is trying to give you a message?
Well, maybe, because I contacted a friend of mine in Wales about this, and she said, have you thought about investigating if there are any ley lines going through your house? I'd never heard about this. So I looked it up on a ley line map of the British Isles and discovered that, sure enough, there's a massive ley line going right through my house, right through the field where we've seen so many things, and the formations that develop there, right through to High Street, which is a mountain in the Lake District, and right up into Scotland. So that was interesting. I think maybe yes, but I don't know what exactly. I find it all very puzzling, yeah.
Well, that is, I don't know what to say about that. Because apparently this has been quite an act, or hasn't been reported too much, quite an active year for crop circles. Have you had them this year?
No, not so far. I have to stress it wasn't circles that the formations I saw in 2008 were actually in the shape of a swastika and almost like a big letter H. And my husband, who, as I say, is always very cynical and scientific, we got out of the car because he saw them first, and then he had to concede that they must have come from the air because he looked and said, well, there's only my footprints in and out. And it was after that that a lot of other strange things happened to me. You know, I felt like I was contacted again by what I now recognise could be the Nordic ETs. So that's what we actually saw, yeah, coming back from the library.
Coming back from the library.
Yeah, of all the places, we'd taken the children to the library to get some books, yeah.
List of consequences. I said at the end of it I'd get to this list of consequences, but it's a very, very long list and I can't do all of them. But the consequences of experiences like you've had, you say you will most certainly be traumatised mentally and physically. You may become more intelligent than you were before. You may become psychic. You may be more empathetic or intuitive. Your consciousness may be raised. Your religious beliefs may be challenged. You may become eco-conscious. You will be unable to believe your own eyes. That is, you will wonder if you're going mad or hallucinating. We've talked about that. You might start to have frequent sightings of UFOs in the sky or on the ground. What else? Sightings of human or non-human shaped figures in your bedroom, which you say that you've had. Vivid dreams, which you've had, poltergeist activity, sudden blackouts, which you've had, buzzing noises, which you've had, ongoing depression, which I think you've had a taste of too. Sometimes watches will stop or break and light bulbs exploding and a whole list of other things. Most of which, by the sounds of it, you've experienced.
Yes, I have. And also, I want to stress that I was quite traumatised both mentally and physically in my teens. By it, I can appear calm now, but I still find it very frightening when it happens. It was very frightening, you know, when I talked about being taken recently on the way back from Folkestone. I found it very frightening, but I've tried to get on with my life, you know, and not let it dominate me to the point where it takes over. You could even get PTSD because I did, I had a nervous breakdown when I was 21. I don't talk about this a lot in my book, but I believe that contributed to it, you know, definitely, amongst other things. Yeah. I think I've become more compassionate as a result of it, actually. And my main reason for coming out about this is that I want to reach other people that are going through the same. That was my main kind of motivating factor, yeah.
The book hasn't been out long. Have you had contact from other people who've been through things like you've been through?
Yeah, I have already. And I've had affirmations from other people claiming that they're abductees, saying that it felt refreshing to read. It's not just them, you know, that saying they've had similar things happening. I even had a guy who was interviewed by in New York, Victor Furnham. I don't know whether you've heard of him, on OM Times Radio. He said, when I read your book, it was like reading my own life story. It was so similar.
Mm. No, I'm not aware of that person, but I hear what they say.
Yeah.
What are you going to do about it all?
I don't know that I can do anything. What I'm trying to do, what I feel I'm ready to do now, is to have some regression therapy. I found a therapist through my book coming out and through attending I don't know whether you've heard of the Awakening Expo.
Yes.
I went to that. Yeah, so I found a therapist through them. And I'm hoping to have regression therapy to try and recover lost time, what I call lost time memories. I'm hoping to get more to the bottom of what has happened to me, where I've been taken and why, or try and theorise why at least, although I've tried to do that already. So I would like to take it further and look more deeply into what's happened to me, I think.
I think you should. I mean, it's not for me to give you advice, but I think you should. Once you've started a ball rolling, you know, you can't really stop it, and I don't think it would help you to stop it. So, I from my point of view, if it was me, then I think I would do that. But you've got to find the right person, as they say. Thank you for talking with me about this. This is the book Phantoms in the Night, or ETs. Where would we get it?
You can get it on Amazon UK and Amazon USA. If you put Lorraine McAdam, LORRAINE and M small c capital ADAM into the search engine, it will just, you know, into the Amazon search engine, it will bring it up. And also on Six Books Limited, which is the John Hunt Publishing's own website, you can get it there. Most ebook sites as well, you know, the other ebook sites it's on. You know, if you just Google Phantoms in the Night, if you just put it into Google, it'll probably bring them all up. I could send some links if you want afterwards, or, you know, but I think they would find it easily.
I've tried searching it and it's pretty easy to find. Well, yeah. Lorraine, it's quite a story. There are many people, I believe, experiencing all sorts of things of this nature all around the world, and an awful lot of them have yet to speak about them. It takes a lot of courage and a lot of motivation and effort to actually do it, and you've done it. Thank you very much for speaking with me.
You're welcome. Thank you. It was nice to meet you.
Your thoughts on this story? Very welcome. Gratefully received. Go to the website, theunexplained.tv. You can send me an email from there. And my thanks to Lorraine McAdam, a new guest to The Unexplained. More great guests in the pipeline here at the home of The Unexplained Online. So until we meet again, my name is Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained. And please, whatever you do, stay safe, stay calm. And above all, please stay in touch. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.